Welcome to the Sourcing Hero podcast, produced by UNA, a group purchasing organization that empowers sourcing heroes, and Art of Procurement, the world's largest procurement podcast network. I'm your host, Kelly Barner. The goal of the Sourcing Hero podcast is to capture the epic stories of people who are rising up and beating the odds to create exceptional value within procurement, directly from those heroes themselves. Today, my guest is Philip Eidson. Phil is the founder and managing director of Art of Procurement, a procurement consulting, membership, and content company that provides CPOs and their teams with the resources they need to enable company growth. He has also worked at both Procurian and Accenture and has experience across the entire indirect and direct procurement value chain. So hi, Phil. Thank you so much for joining me here on the Sourcing Hero podcast.
Hey, Kelly. Thank you very much for the introduction. It's my pleasure to be here today.
Now, from that introduction, you sound incredibly busy, but that doesn't necessarily give us a sense of what your typical day is like. Mm-hmm. So before we jump into the meat of the conversation, can you tell me a little bit more about your current role?
Sure. So as you mentioned there, I'm managing director of Art of Procurement, which is a company that I started about 6 years ago now to really help procurement leaders elevate the procurement profession. And so on a day-to-day basis, you know, my activities can go from recording content, being involved in webinars, helping organizations increase the capability of their procurement teams and doing some consulting work to help them do that, to, you know, planning events, and lots in between. You know, I have a really varied, I really enjoy what I do. I'm doing a lot of varied things. And I'm also really, what I love about it is that I get to speak to folks all around the world in the process. So definitely keeping busy, but all in that same kind of aim of just helping procurement leaders elevate and grow their profession and the impact that they have.
Absolutely. And of course, in full disclosure, right, I work with you at Art of Procurement, so I'm not exactly meeting you for the first time today. And so I happen to know behind the scenes that you always start off podcast interviews or AOP live sessions mm-hmm. by asking people whether they found procurement or procurement found them. And we've definitely heard you at times answer that question. So I'm not going to give you that starting question. Okay. I'm instead going to focus in on why did you make the decision to go out on your own versus continuing to work at a large consulting firm? Or maybe asked another way, what on earth were you thinking?
Yeah, I wonder that, you know, 6 years later. And there's definitely been times on that that entrepreneurial roller coaster where I've been thinking that, because that roller coaster is certainly real. you know, I think that I've always had that passion for entrepreneurship. But perhaps I was always a little bit too risk averse in the early stages of my career. So I really wanted, you know, as I got involved in procurement and some of the organizations I worked with, you know, had lots of opportunity to do things I never dreamed that I would be able to do. And frankly, probably to get paid what I never thought I would be able to get paid. And so I had all these, you know, jobs and things that I enjoyed, and you start to have a, you know, you get the mortgage and you have a family and you realize that, wow, if it was a risky proposition, you know, when I was 25, now when I'm 35, it's an even riskier proposition. And, you know, as I get older, it's going to be even more risky. So I've either got to put up or shut up. So it was less about I'm in a large consulting organization and wanting to go and do something different, and more, I either need to follow through and do this, and I need to do it now and not have any regrets, or put it out of my mind and truly focus on, you know, more of that corporate career. And I just thought I don't want the regrets of never trying. And that was really the impetus of going and doing it.
Well, for any of us that have spent the last over 5 years now listening to the Art of Procurement podcast, I think everyone's glad that you decided to put up instead of shut up.
Thank you.
But the other thing that we often hear from people, and this is a conversation you and I both get to have, is that from the listening members of our community, whether they happen to be practitioners or whether they happen to be on the service or solution provider side of things, they all appreciate the fact that we started off working as practitioners, yeah. right? There's an authenticity and an understanding that comes with that. So given that you spent time, what would you say is the coolest or the most interesting thing that you ever actually sourced?
That's a great question. You know, I bought so many different random things that, you know, you never know that you have any idea about, and you find yourself, you know, being the expert in buying them. I think the things that I enjoyed buying the most were actually when I was on the direct material side in automotive, because I would be buying things I would see, you know, on a day-to-day basis out there in the wild. And you could have that direct connection with what you have bought versus, you know, it actually being a tangible product. So an example is I was responsible for buying LED lighting that was the first LED lighting, head lighting and rear lights that went into Cadillacs, and they went to the Cadillac Escalades. And then a smaller vehicle that Cadillac came out with. And so you see that as being like it was a technical innovation, and you see it driving around, and you see them even, you know, now that's probably 12 years ago, I still see it driving around in updated versions. So I really kind of enjoyed buying those kind of things. The weirdest for me was childcare. So I had to buy Montessori childcare for a pharmaceutical giant for their local site with, you know, and at that point I was probably 24, had no idea, had no kids, had no idea of childcare.
Yeah, not a consumer.
No, exactly. Yeah, having to make all these decisions around learning and teaching styles and helping. I mean, that was a strange one and probably the one that I felt most out of my depth for.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that seeing some of the things that you work to source sort of drive by literally in yeah. the real world is an interesting connection, because most of us in procurement right now are sort of seeing the opposite of that. And that's the invasion of front page headlines mm-hmm. coming into our world. We've been seeing a lot of news stories recently about either labor shortages or inflationary pressures that are starting to change the cost structures of the things that we buy. And increasingly, when we reload our inbox or when we see that there's a phone call, it is from a supplier getting in touch to say, listen, conditions have changed. I can no longer honor the terms of the contract that yeah. we have in place. When are you seeing or when are you hearing from conversations that suppliers are currently reaching out right now because they are concerned that they can't hold the prices they've agreed to?
I think that you're seeing most suppliers across the categories that are most impacted by cost increases reach out for cost increase requests, because if they don't, it suggests that they have too much profit margin, that they've been able to absorb it. So it's almost like they can't not ask for it, because mm-hmm. that on its own leads to questions being asked. And of course, you know, all businesses are wanting to pass on their input costs and any increase in their input costs. So now there's one thing about reaching out and asking, and another thing about accepting. But I'm seeing, you know, a lot of folks being hit by cost increase requests right now, as we're starting to see some of these inflationary pressures, certainly in the input costs that, you know, fuel a lot of these categories of spend.
Is it hard to tell if they're real, right? Because if I put myself in the supplier seat right now, like, okay, now seems like a pretty good time to just start making phone calls and see who I can get to accept this increase. How does procurement determine when it's a legitimate request?
Yeah, absolutely. It is really hard to know whether it's a real request or not a real request. And what's even harder is the request that's being asked, is it in line with their true increase in input mm-hmm. costs? So what I mean by that is, you know, I remember an example when I was on the buyer side of things back when oil prices spiked, 10, 11 years ago, where, you know, we'd have trucking companies coming and asking for big increases in costs because they would say that the oil is increasing, but oil as a percentage of the total cost of trucking was, and I don't know, I don't remember exact percentages, like 30%, somewhere around 30%. But they were asking for it as if it was, you know, 80% of the cost. And so, you know, it's kind of using, they're using that as an excuse to increase the price over and above what the actual true increase in input costs are. And I think that's the harder thing for procurement to really understand, and that we need to be looking at when we do get requests like that, is how much is this really a genuine increase request versus how much is somebody trying to maybe either make up for a lower margin that they want, or just try to take advantage of the situation.
Now, if we do evaluate the request and determine that some or all of it is in fact appropriate, even mm-hmm. temporarily, what are a few options that procurement has to maybe mitigate it, maybe contain how long it lasts? Do we have any options?
Yeah, I'd say, you know, I'd start out by saying that to make it clear that this is a temporary increase, and that the temporary increase, as far as you can possibly do this, is tagged to whether it's an index or some kind of underlying cost base. You know, it could be inflation, it could be if it's related to a commodity, whatever that commodity market's doing, whatever that is, but peg it to something so that when that goes back down again, you know, you have the ability to bring the prices back down in line with where they should be. Because one of the things that we see a lot is that, you know, suppliers will come in for these cost increases and they're perfectly valid cost increase requests, but they're not going to come later and say, hey, the input cost went down, I'm going to reduce your price.
You know, when the phone doesn't ring, you know it's your supplier.
Right. You might, you need to be on top of that, because you run the risk of input cost going down, you're still paying the higher price. And then when the next time comes, they're asking for another price increase and it's compounding. So definitely keep a lookout on that. But even, you know, if you've even done that, and I would recommend kind of how do you mitigate the cost increase. And it doesn't have to be when a cost is being increased, actually, some of the tactics you can use, but, you know, things like looking at reducing the cost to serve. So you've had to take this increase. How much am I actually putting on the supplier where it's costing them money to serve me that they shouldn't actually be doing? And these are really good kind of burning platforms to have those conversations. You know, is what I'm buying over specified? Do I have too stringent KPIs or SLAs? Am I making it really difficult because they have to follow up with accounts payable 10 times to get paid? You know, what are things that I can do to help them reduce their costs, which then I can take out of the price and could offset at least some way the mitigation increase? You know, another one is how, if you have to pay an increase in cost, like how can you work on the demand side? So is there something you can do from an internal perspective to put more governance controls in place, which make it a little bit harder, you know, more hurdles to jump to go and buy whatever it is that you're buying, if it's something that is, you know, it's not something that goes into production. It's something that's on the indirect side. Or can you allow something to last a little bit longer before you replace it than you did before? So there's certainly things that you can do to reduce your consumption if the price is going to go up, which, you know, has an impact, of course, on your total budget.
Now, this also intersects with a couple of things that procurement has been working very hard to manage. One being the customer experience, our mm-hmm. relationships with internal stakeholders, and the other being the supplier experience. And so it occurs to me that if we don't sort of handle all the communications around this type of request right, we may be creating a problem for ourselves. Now, if I get an increased request from a supplier, whether or not it happens to be legitimate, it does seem like maybe reaching out and making sure that relevant budget owners or decision makers know.
Yeah.
Is there a way to do that without ruining both relationships? Like, can we have this conversation without being pegged as tattletales on the supplier?
You know, it's, I think some of it's down to how the supplier communicates with you in the first place. You know, if you're receiving a letter from a supplier that says, that's a form letter that says our prices are going up by 3% or 5% or whatever that may be, you know, you may want to manage that differently than if a supplier comes to you and says, look, I'm really struggling. We've got all these pressures. This is what these pressures are doing. You know, can we work together to figure this out? Because, you know, if you're going to get a letter from somebody that's a form letter, you're probably going to forward that on to all your stakeholders. And immediately everyone's back is kind of up. Or there's conflict between those who like the supplier and say, well, you just got to take it. And those that obviously don't. Whereas if the supplier comes to you from the collaboration and let's work together on this perspective, then you can message that internally. Because at the end of the day, as a procurement professional, while yes, we are often, you know, our metrics are aligned with stopping these cost increases, sometimes you know it's the right thing to do, because you know you just, the data says that you just can't get away from the fact that these costs have increased, and you don't want to put undue financial pressure on your suppliers, and so you have to become the advocate for your supplier to get an increase in cost, because at the end of the day, it's going to be the budget holder that pays the increase. It's not you that pays the increase. So how you want that conversation to go, I think, does drive how you should be communicating it internally. And the supplier, the way the supplier communicates with you, is a big part of that.
Now, you mentioned metrics, and there's no way, unfortunately, that accepting an increase like this doesn't ultimately hit realized savings. Mm-hmm. But hopefully that doesn't mean that there isn't some upside. So even if procurement has to accept some kind of temporary price increase from a supplier, is there any option for the whole situation to create a positive opportunity for procurement internally?
Yeah, I think so. And I would, one would say, just when it comes to procurement metrics, I know that a lot of organizations don't like to track or don't allow you to track cost avoidance. But if you know your data and you're able to negotiate an increase that's below what the market is taking, that's still while it's not a good news story, it's not a bad news story. So I think that you should be communicating the fact that while there's an increase, it's an increase that's lower than market. So
absolutely.
From, you know, that your competitors are likely being hit with an increase even higher than what you've negotiated. But on the other side, you know, I think that there's an opportunity for us to work with sales to make sure that as much as is possible, these cost increases are captured first and foremost, but then that our sales folks are having the same conversations with their customers, because there's an opportunity for either one, for that to drive goodwill between your customers. If sales are aware of this and they can have those conversations around, well, this is what's happening from an input cost perspective, here is the data, and we're absorbing that or absorbing part of that. You know, it shows you to be a supplier of choice to your customer, or you can take that data and you can be passing it on and passing through the increase in its entirety, and even perhaps at a higher level than what the increase actually is. And making that into a profitable or at least not a loss-making situation. And I just don't see enough collaboration typically between procurement and sales to make that connection.
Now, it may also provide an opportunity for us to talk about one of the other things that I ask everybody who joins me on this podcast is, and that's heroism. Right. Mm-hmm. So we think about heroism certainly in the public service sense, but in this context, we think about it in the business context. Now, especially right now, where so many of these potential cost increases are being driven by larger economic conditions that neither procurement nor suppliers have control of, when we find ourselves in this mode, is there an opportunity for procurement to be a hero to the enterprise when they're in sort of like bottom line protection mode? Mm-hmm. Can we be a hero in this moment?
Yes. Although the challenge is, what's the long-term impact? You know, if your organization is in cost-cutting mode and you come to the table having cut a lot of costs, now when they're in cost-cutting mode, a lot of times it's, you know, you're looking to cut costs at all costs. And so it doesn't matter what the impact is. I think the ability for you to be a hero at that situation is doing it responsibly. So, you know, I'm really passionate about responsible expense management or cost savings. It's in a way that still maintains the relationship, that you're not trying to just take margin away from your providers. When they've not got much margin to start with, you know, you're not taking the last pennies away from them. And so that comes down to, it being more around those conversations and looking at input costs and how can you reduce cost to serve and doing kind of value analysis and value engineering and cutting costs in a way that's sustainable, that's going to stick. You know, if you're going in and cutting costs by just using pure leverage, then that's going to be okay for the next 2 or 3 months. But then you're going to have a lot of problems. You know, the problems can be that the level of service is reduced or the level of quality is reduced because of the new cost. So there's lots of quality issues, and those can then lead your stakeholders to go around you completely in the deals that you put in place to buy off contract, which all create problems. So that's where I'd focus if we really want to make procurement a hero out of cost cutting, is making sure we're doing it in a responsible way and a way that enables that those savings stick.
Now, if procurement can find a way to be a hero around responsibly delivering cost savings, this actually reminds me of the conversation about sourcing heroism that I had with Kanda Rozier when she came on the Sourcing Hero podcast. And she pointed out, I think in the moment was spontaneous, but it worked in the larger conversation. She pointed out that when you think of things like Greek mythology, a lot of times heroes don't get happy endings. Mm-hmm. And so if we think about, okay, so the company is in cost-cutting mode and procurement is a hero, they find some way to responsibly cut these costs. Is there a risk that we're doing that at the expense of procurement's happy ending? You know, if we get known as being too good at cutting costs and defending that bottom line, do we risk being turned back into sort of transactional penny pinching, that old administrative, right? Is that a risk for us if we're too good at it?
100%, I think it is, because that's the traditional notion of what procurement does. It's like procurement is this SWAT team of cost cutters, you know, who can swoop in when the organization is in some trouble and take a bunch of cost out. And then once we've kind of got over that part of the business cycle, let's just put them back in the box and we'll call them, you know, the next time we're in trouble. And that's a big risk. And I think it's something that a lot of procurement organizations struggle with. You know, how I'd encourage them to think about this is always make sure that we're communicating more of a value proposition than being cost savings alone. That doesn't mean that we are measured on other things. It can just be in communication and can be in positioning. It can be in demonstrating the benefits and the value that we bring over and above cost, so that the organization just doesn't look at us as being the cost cutter. Because that is hard. And you know, I'm seeing it now as we record that there was a lot of focus on procurement in the darkest days of the pandemic. And for those organizations that really went to town with a cost cutting and cost cutting only approach, they're struggling to maintain relevancy when it's all about growth. So it's absolutely, you know, you need to be aware of it rather than just going looking at cost cutting only.
Absolutely. And like everything else that we would encourage procurement in their work is to be thoughtful about it, right? It's, you know, there's the actions that you have to take because the moment demands it. Mm-hmm. And then there's the way you position it or communicate it out to the enterprise. And hopefully teams can find a way to balance doing what needs to be done in the short term versus unintentionally repositioning procurement in the longer run, because something tells me we're going to be facing some of these pressures for a little while. So this is not a brief moment in time that we're going to be dealing with these conditions.
You know, a mentor told me that the CFO and you know, the majority of the C-suite don't wake up every morning thinking, how can they save money? How can they cut costs? You know, they wake up thinking about how can we grow the business and take it to the next level? And, you know, how can we enact new strategies? And, you know, even though cutting costs may be a part, you know, a pillar of that strategy, it's typically, you can't cut yourself to growth. And so I think we always have to have that perspective of, even if that's the mode that we're in today, it's not going to be the mode that our organization would benefit from us in the future. And we don't get to show the organization what else we can do if they only see us as being cost cutters.
That is absolutely true. Phil, thank you so much for joining me here on the Sourcing Hero podcast. It was fantastic having you with me today.
My pleasure. It's always a pleasure, Kelly.
And if people want to reach out, learn more about you individually, if they want to learn more about Art of Procurement, where would you suggest that they go?
Sure. So Art of Procurement is an easy one. It's artofprocurement.com. And you'll find everything related to what we do and all the content and the events and activities right there on the homepage. And I'm always in LinkedIn, so anybody is always welcome to look me up on LinkedIn and send me an invite request.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Sourcing Hero podcast. Join us again next time for more true stories of sourcing and business heroism performed by your colleagues and peers. Look for the Sourcing Hero wherever you get your podcasts, and don't forget to subscribe. Finally, don't forget, sourcing heroism is taking place all around us every day. Keep your eyes open and you're bound to see it. Until next time, I'm your host, Kelly Barner. Stay well, and always remember that you can be a hero too.